We're holding on Nun Bey's Amud Bey's the second Mishnah. Now that we learned in the previous Mishnayos about the methods that they use for skila, for sreifa, for hereg, now comes the last one, chenek. Mishnah says mitzvah sanechnokin, the way they did the mitzvah of chenek, of strangling. They would have him. They would put him into a pile of dung, a pile of animal waste, up to his knees. Now we learned the same thing in connection with Srefa Nun Beis Amud Aleph, and we learned there were a couple of reasons. Rashi had said the reason is so he doesn't move around, and the hot lead will end up falling on his skin. The Yad Ramah points out in that case, why would we be doing that by chenek? If by chenek you don't have, there's no hot lead. So he rather understands the reason is because out of fear the person might lose control of his bowels, and this way the people who are handling him don't get dirty. In any case, and then there's the explanation that we learned about that once they do it by Sefer, then they do a fairly similar thing by Chenek as well, even though it's food, strictly speaking, they wouldn't need it. Anyway, it's also of course part of the Bizoyan, that's also part of his kapara. Anyway, the nuisance sudar koshal osecharaka, and they put a hard a stiff scarf into a soft one. Again, similar to the way they did by Srefa. By Srefa, according to the Tanakhama, they did it this way in order to force him to open his mouth. Here, this itself is going to be the means by which they strangle him. But they wrap it around his neck. One aid pulls in one direction, the other in the other direction, until he dies. So here again, like with the other one, we need a soft one and we need a hard one, because a hard one, a stiff one by itself would scratch up his neck, and that's not supposed to be part of the punishment, and a soft one by itself wouldn't be enough to strangle him, or it might even rip. Okay, so let's talk about where we know in the Torah. Now, when you get down to it, when it comes to the Dalad Mrs. Beis Din, Skila we find mentioned in various psukim, Barog Moisa Kola Eda, and other similar psukim. Sreifa we have mentioned a couple of times, Ba'ish Yisrafu Oisa, Esen, and Ba'ish Tisaref, and whatever. Hereg, we learned yesterday, we find a pasuk for it, Nokim, we found psukim for it, Nokim, and that the Ir HaNidachas is killed Lafi Chorev. Chenek, it doesn't actually say anywhere in so many words in the Psukim that there is such a punishment. So let's now, they're going to learn later in the Masechta that there are six cases for which a person is chayav chenek, and one of them is an eshes ish. As we've been learning throughout the perek, sometimes an eshes ish is going to be chayav skila if she's a naira marasa. Sometimes she's going to be chayav srefa, according to all the various opinions that we learned about when exactly that applies. And sometimes, but the default is chenek. So now we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to learn from that in general how we know the concept of chenek in the first place, and how we know, as we said, according to the Chachamim, it's the least severe of the four misses, so we're going to talk about all of that. So the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan. Now we have like this. The pasuk says in the Aseret HaDibros. Here we're coming up now to it's Metzori Shabbos B'Shalach, so we're starting Parshas Yisroi, and you have the Aseret HaDibros Lo Sinach, but it doesn't give any details. Later on in Parshas Kedoshim, it gives the details. The pasuk goes as follows. The ish asher yinafas eshes ish, a man who commits adultery with a married woman, asher yinafas eshes re'ehu, who commits adultery with the wife of some of a fellow person, of a fellow yid, mois yumas hanoyef hane'ofes, then the noyef and the ne'efes, the man and the woman who committed adultery are going to be put to death. So now this braisa is going to darshan this pasuk phrase by phrase. When it starts by saying ish, the ish asher yinaf, that means prat l'katan. That means to exclude a katan who committed adultery with somebody else's wife. Now, the point is he's too little. He's below age to be punished. So even though we're talking about he's 9 years old, if he's below nine, his bia is not considered a bia anyhow. But if he's above nine and below bar mitzvah, he's not going to be chayiv misa, even though the bia is a bia, and she will be chayiv misa for it, but he will not because he's underage. And the point of it is, Tosfos elsewhere explains that when you get down to it, you would think, given that it's going to be enough, it's considered a bia, and she's punishable for it, maybe in this case we should make an exception and say that he should be chayiv misa as well, and we'll say no, therefore the pasuk comes to tell us that not. The pasuk continues, "Asher yinafas eshes ish," that he commits adultery with a man, with a wife of a man. So why again repeat the word man? That means prat la'eshes katan. That means as opposed to if she's the wife of a katan. So in other words, so exactly that. So she's married to a katan. Nevertheless, though, that marriage is not considered a vow. That marriage is not considered a marriage al pi Torah. It's only dirabanan, and therefore there's no chiyuv misa. So, in fact, elsewhere in that same in Kiddushin, the same place where Tosfos had pointed that point out about that the Chiddush is that the katan is not punishable, even though the woman is. Here we have, on the other hand, we could talk about even if let's say it was a Yavam and Yavama, and he had relations with the Yavama when he was over nine, where there it's considered to be normally a katan is not able to be Mekadosh. So what's the Chiddush? Of course he's not married to her, but in this case where you don't need Kiddushin, Midaraisa, all you need is Bia, and his Bia is considered a Bia, so you would think therefore that therefore she should be considered his wife, and the fact is, for example, he yaushins her, but nevertheless she's not a full ishish ish. Well, this is how Rashi learns it over there. Tosfos actually disagrees and says maybe in that case she would be considered an ishish ish. But in any case, here we're saying that when she's the wife of a cotton, then she's not chayiv misa for adultery because she's not fully married to him. Anyway, the pasuk continues. Eishes Re'ehu. The pasuk says that he commits adultery with the wife of Re'ehu, and Re'ehu means a fellow yid. Pratla Eishes Acherim, as opposed to if she's the wife of someone else, meaning of a goy. Because even though there are certain areas in Torah where we say that goyish marriages are considered marriages for this, and it is also to commit adultery with them, but nevertheless he wouldn't be chayiv misa for it. So Tosfos points that out. There is an Isser. We see, for example, that an Eishes Ish, we see, for example, that a Yafas Toyar is specially Mutter, even though she's an Eishes Ish, implying that otherwise she is also, just we're saying over here, there's no Misa involved. So that's what we learned from Eishes Re'ehu. In other words, that's why the Pasuk has to repeat it. Why does it have to repeat? Asher Yinafes Eishes Ish, Asher Yinafes Eishes Re'ehu. One is teaching us that it doesn't apply when she's the wife of a cotton, and one teaches us it doesn't apply when she's the wife of a goy. Next, the pasuk continues. Mois yumas, the he or both of them actually are put to death. That means what kind of death? Bechenek. Ata oima bechenek continues the braisa. You're saying that it means chenek. Oyena ela ba'achas we call misas amuras batora. How do you know? Maybe it's one of the other misses. It doesn't say after all in the pasuk. And the answer is amrit. You have to say kol mokum shenema misa batora stam. Any time it says that the Torah misa without specifying what kind of misa. So we have to assume that it means the most lenient of the punishments. You cannot pull her to another misa and be mechayev her on something stronger. You have to assume that it's the weakest possible misa. That's what Rabbi Yoshia says. Since he holds like the Chachamim, as we've learned in our Perek, that Chenek is the most lenient of the four punishments, we don't have any basis to say that it should be any harsher punishment. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia, that's how Rabbi Yoshia learns. Rabbi Yonasan says, Loi mipnei shehi kala. No, the reason is not because Chenek is the most lenient of them. In fact, as the Gemara is going to point out later on, he holds like Rabbi Shimon that Chenek is harsher than Hereg. Ella, Rabbi Yonasan says, no, the rule is kol misa hamura b'torah stam eina ella Chenek. That's just the way it is. Anytime the Torah says misa without specifying, then it means Chenek. So it's just a Kabbalah, Biadenu, it's just a tradition that we have that goes back, L'moshe Misinai, not by a logical thing, because it should be the most lenient, like Rabbi Yoshi is saying, but just because that's how it is. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says, and Rashi continues that, and Rashi explains, so now Rashi explains, what Rebbe is going to say now is not a third opinion, he's clarifying Rabbi Yonasan's opinion. So, on the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that Rebbe is going to have a third opinion. Anyway, Rebbe Omer, Nemra Misa Bidei Shemayim, we find by the case of Aaron Onan, the sons of Yehuda, in particular by Onan, where it says that Hashem punished him, by Yomes Gam Oiso, it says over there that Hashem put him to death. You have the whole thing over there where Aaron was married to Tamar and he didn't want to impregnate her, so he did, he was wasting his Zera, and then Onan did the same thing, and therefore the Pasuk says, by Yomes Gam Oiso, that Hashem put him to death as well. So you have a posik vayomes that refers to Hashem punishing a person directly. And then you find similarly where it says mois yumas hanoyafane office, again without specifying what kind of misa. So Rebbe says we can derive as follows. When it comes to how was Onan killed, an heir for that matter, it was a misa bidei shemayim. There was presumably no mark on the body. We don't find, in other words, that there was any external evidence on his body that something like he had been wounded or something. He just vayomas kamoisa, he died. But his body was completely intact. Af misam murabide odam misashain barushim. The same way, we have to assume that the misabide odam also has to be where there's no mark left of it. So that would be chenek, because the entire body remains intact. Skilla, you know, the body is bleeding as a result of and wounded as a result of the fall and as a result of the rock. Sreifa, the internal organs are burnt. Hereg, his head is chopped off. Chenek is the only one, says Rebbe, where the body remains completely intact, and therefore we can learn from the story of Aaron Oinon that here also chenek has to be, that there has to be some kind of punishment for Eishes, for the Noyef and the Neefes, that involves that the body remains completely intact, namely chenek. So again, Rashi understands that that Rebbe is not giving a third opinion over here. He's just explaining when Rabbi Yonason had said that the rule is kol misaham murav atardestam ein elachenek. So Rebbe is explaining where it's not just purely a halachah l'moshe misinei without any basis in the pasuk. You can actually find a basis in the pasuk for it. On the other hand, a couple of Rishonim learn that actually that Rebbe is learning differently than Rabbi Yonason. They're all agreeing with the same thing, that it's chenek, but he's learning it in a different way, actually. So fine. Okay, the Gemara asks Ve'ema Sreifa. Wait a minute, though. The fact is, okay, you're going to tell me that in Sreifa there is internal organs that are burnt, but still, from the outside, the body still looks completely intact. So if you need Misa She'en Baroshem, then also Sreifa is going to be the same kind of thing as well. The body remains intact. So why don't we say, according to Rebbe's understanding, that if we're looking for Misa She'en Baroshem, then it should be Sreifa. And the answer is Mida Omarachmana Bas Koyen with Sreifa, because since as we've discussed the last few blah, a Bas Koyen gets Sreifa when she was Mazana, so therefore Miklal to her La Bas Sreifa. He said, therefore, it's evidently a Bas Yisrael is not getting Sreifa, otherwise the Torah wouldn't have to single out a Bas Koyen. So that alone shows that there is a difference between that itself shows that it can't be Sreifa, and since it can't be either of the other two, according to Rebbe, because there is a Roisham, there is a mark on the body, then therefore we have to understand that it means chenek. Now, Maharsha discusses over here. We're not saying that Rabbi Yonason would also would say, listen, after all, chenek is according to everybody less stringent than sreifa, and therefore he can't say that it would be sreifa. But the question is that still, why wouldn't we do saif and then. And so, in other words, there's two factors over here. Rabbi Yonason is making the point that it has to be, it's just a Kabbalah. Well, so Rabbi Yoshia made the point it has to be the most lenient. Rabbi Yonason is not actually necessarily saying that. He's not saying it has to be the most lenient. Otherwise, he would say Hereg, because according to him, Hereg is the most lenient. But then you have, so again, Rebbe is saying over here, there's a logical reason behind it, because you need Misa She'en Baroshem, and therefore that automatically cuts out Chenek, that automatically cuts out Hereg as well, so it certainly can't be the most lenient, and you would have said Sreifa, but you can't. So Maharsha, in other words, discusses that if we were to assume that there's no Misa of Chenek in the first place, which the Gemara is going to take up that point soon, again, after all, the Torah never says in so many words Chenek, so therefore maybe there is no Chenek at all, then maybe we would have to say that, listen, we have only three, and therefore we have to have our choice between them, and therefore maybe if we want Misa Shein Maroshim, then it would have to be Sreifa. But the answer is it can't, because Sreifa is reserved for a Bas Koyin. Okay, so the Gemara says, Bishleim al Rabbi Yonason, could you come farash Rabbi Taima? Okay, so Rabbi Yonason, we understand why he says that it's Chenek, because Rabbi has explained the reason that we will have this Zera Shava from the story with Aaron Oinon. El al Rabbi Yoshia, but according to Rabbi Yoshia, he's saying that we can't make it any more stringent than we have to ask. Mimai de'ika chenek ba'olam, then who says b'chlal there exists even such a punishment as chenek? A masayif, maybe in fact, there's only three misses based in, and of them the most lenient is Saif. So therefore, maybe in, according to him, that the logic is you have to give her the least least stringent one. So maybe you should say therefore that you only have three, and therefore of the three, then you're going to have to pick Hereg. The answer is Amar Rava. No, Aramisis Gemara Gmiri Lahu. No, the fact that there are Aramisis, we have it's a clear halacha l'moshe misinai that there are four. So therefore, so if the Torah. So we know for a fact that chenek exists. since the Torah, so Rashi explains, the point is, since the Torah doesn't specify which ones get chedek, unlike the Torah specifies at least some of the ones that get skila, some of the ones that some or all of the ones that get sreifa, the ones that get hereg, all of them are specified in the Torah. So therefore, and it doesn't mention at all who gets chenek. It doesn't even mention the punishment of chenek at all. That's strictly halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. So therefore, we should assume that it is the most lenient of all of them. And therefore, it's left for like all the ones. So like by default, in other words, we would say any case where a person is chayav misa, then by default, it's going to be this one precisely because it's the most lenient. So that's what Rabbi Yoshia would say is there has to be chenek, and he would say, but the very fact that the Torah doesn't specify which averis get chenek itself implies that it is the most lenient one.
Why all of them are mentioned in the Torah, and chenek is the only one that's not mentioned in the Torah? What's the reason?
Well, that's what we're saying over here. According to Rabbi Yoshia, at least the reason is because it doesn't need to. We have halacha l'moshe Mitzrayim that there is chenek, and it doesn't specify which averis get it precisely because it's the most lenient, and we're going to assume by default we're going to use the most lenient punishment available.
You could say the same with the three others. Then the Torah didn't have to mention the three others.
No, because the three others, we have halacha l'moshe Mitzrayim, that there exists skila, that there exists sefer, that there exists hereg, but without the Torah telling us, we wouldn't know who gets what. So it has to specify, for example, a Megadef, an Ovid Avodah Zarah, a Machal Shabbos, or whatever. Don't think they get a more lenient punishment. You have to realize they get the most severe, which is Skila, or according to Reb Shimon, it's the second most severe. A Bas Koyen Shazinsa, and various other cases, you don't think they get the most lenient punishment. No, they get Sreifa, which is going to be the harshest, or second harshest, and so forth. Only when it comes to Chenek, basically, what we're saying is that everything where the Torah specifies there is a death penalty, but it doesn't specify what it is, then it has to be, says Rabbi Yoshia, the most lenient one. And what is the most lenient one? Halacha l'moshe Mitzrayim tells us that it is chenek.
So it's by default, basically.
That's what we're saying, by default, right. So in fact, now an interesting point that Achronim point out over here is that... So over here, in other words, Rashi is saying all we know from the halacha l'moshe Mitzrayim is the fact that there exists four Mrs. Beis Din. The halacha l'moshe Mitzrayim doesn't tell, Hashem didn't necessarily teach Moshe anything about the order of severity of them. And in fact, of course, earlier in the perek, we had the whole machloikas about it, and we had all the details of how we learned that out. Now, earlier in the perek, Rashi had implied that had said that the order of the chumrah itself, that the order itself, Rabbi Yoshia is learning actually in our sugya itself. Rashi is saying that Rabbi Yoshia learns that part of the halacha l'moshe Mitzrayim is in fact the order of precedence, and therefore that he learns that, Rashi says, well, come on, Mefarish, the Arba Misses Kisidron Gemara Gmir Lahu Rabbi Yoshia Mitzrayim, that the four Misses, according to their order, Rabbi Yoshia learned from Har Sinai. So in other words, according to him, both the concept that there are four Misses and the order of them, Skila, then Sreifa, then Hereg, then Chenek, according to him, all of that was taught to Moshe at Har Sinai. Whereas over here, Rashi seems to be saying that just the fact, all we know from Sinai, is the fact that there are four Misses and no more than that. So Achronim discuss how to reconcile these two points of Rashi. Binyan Shloima says that when Rashi had said before that the order is halacha, he doesn't mean that's not part of the halacha l'moshe Mitzrayim. We mean that once we have the four, then in fact, the fact that we learn chenek is the most lenient, that we have the drushes from Sukkim and the whole series of logical steps that we did before in the Gemara and Daf Nun. So that's how Rashi learns the Yad David, that's how Binyan Shloima learns, the Yad David learns differently, He has a different way of reconciling the two Rashis, but again the idea would be that once we figure out that Chenek is the most lenient one, then it means that that's the one that's by default for all of them. Anyway, so that's what Rabbi Yoshia holds. My loy mipnei shehi kala. Now, what does he mean? What does Rabbi Yonason mean though when he says not because Chenek is the most lenient one? Because they're arguing within the argument of Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yoshia holds like the Chachamim that Chenek is the most lenient. Therefore, he can go based on that. Rabbi Yonason, who holds like Rabbi Shimon that Hereg is the most lenient. It's not a matter of being the most lenient because then it would be Hereg. Rather, he has to say it's just that's how it is. That kol misa hamura batora stam. We did have a logical basis for it that Rebbe pointed out because it has to be that it doesn't leave any mark on the body. But so that's the machlokes. Okay, so now like this, the next Mishnah is going to tell us that there are 18 averis for which a person gets skila. Now, not all of them does it say in the Torah in so many words skila. There's a couple of them that it says. There's a couple of them that it says skila, but not all of them. So Amalei Reb Zeira La Abaya, Shana Neskolin, the like Sibbo Skila. What about most of the cases of Skila? You have, there's a couple of them. Of a Zara, it says clearly Skila, Naira Mairasa, a few others where it explicitly says Skila, but most of them it does not. Degamri me Ovi Yidoni. Now we know that we learn that they get Skila. We learn by Xeira Shava from Oven Yidoni. Namely, by Oven Yidoni, the last plus two types of magic. We're going to talk about them in more detail later in our perek. So the Torah says clearly by them, but Evan Yugmu Oisam Dmehem Bum, they're to be stoned and their blood is on them. So we learn from that to a bunch of other cases that are also Chayiv Skila. The question is, B'mai Gamri, which words of the Pasuk are we using for the Gzeira Shava? B'mois Yumosu Gamri, Oi B'dmehem Bum Gamri. Do we learn it from the words Mois Yumosu that are in the pasuk over there by Oven Yudoni, or do we learn it from the words Dmehem Bum? And the question is, Di'iba Mois Yumosu Gamri. We would have to ask if we're learning from the words Mois Yumosu, then we would have to ask Dmehem Dmehem Lomali. Then why would it be saying the words Dmehem Bum by the Oven Yudoni and by other cases of Skila? If we're learning from Mois Yumosu, then what would we need the words Dmehem Bum for? Well, the Gemara asks, well, then why are you asking that direction? Ask in the other direction. Elamai b'dmehem dmehem gamri. So you're telling me you're learning from the Gzeira Shava of the words dmehem bom, Mois Yumosu lomali, then why would I have to say Mois Yumosu? So either way, you have something extra on the face of it. Why is Reb Zera asking the question only if we say that we learn from Mois Yumosu? He could equally well ask the question the other way around if we learn from dmehem bom. So the answer is Kidatanya. No, because we need the words Mos Yumasu for a different limud. As we learn in a Braisa, Mos Yumas Hamaka Retseahu, when the Pasuk says by a murderer, the murderer should be killed, Retseahu, because he's a Retseach, if it only said Yumas, Aimli Elab, Misak Suvaboy, then you would think that the only valid way to kill him is with Hereg, which is supposed to be the punishment for Retseach. But as we learned a few days ago, how do we know that if it's impossible to kill him with the misa that he's supposed to get, but he's already been tried and sentenced by Beis Din, and just for example he ran away or whatever, and we can't now do saif to him, that then we're allowed to kill him with any method that we could, even let's say for example shooting an arrow at him was the example that we learned previously on Memhei Omid Beis. So how do we know? Tamad Lema, Mois Yumas Hamakim, we call Makim, therefore we learn that the Pasuk says, Mois Yumas Hamakim, meaning the Mois Yumas, the double expression, means regardless, in any case, we're going to put him to death using whatever method we can. The point being, in other words, the same way, by the other Mrs. Bastin, by the other people who are Chayav Mrs. Bastin, we can say something similar. We can say that when it says by each of them, Mois Yumasu, is meant to teach us the same kind of concept that if for whatever reason, so they've been tried and sentenced by Bastin, but for whatever reason, we're not able to kill them with that appropriate Missa, then instead we're going to kill them however way we can. So we could say, therefore, the words Mois Yumasu are not necessarily extra, but if we're going to learn from the Gzeira Shava of Mois Yumasu, That it means that Bechlau, to teach that they're Chayev Skila in the first place, because otherwise we wouldn't have known what kind of Misa they get, and we're going to learn by Gzeira Shava from Oven Yidoni, then what are the words Dmehem Bam doing over there in the first place? So that was Reb Zeira's question. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Achami Difti L'Ravina. So Rav Achami Difti, in a later generation, asks Ravina. Still you have to ask, what is Reb Zeira asking? V'ibu Mois Yumosu Gamri. If we're going to say that you're learning from the words moisu mosu, then you still have the you'd still have the question. My kokashale, what would be Reb Zera's problem? Why would Reb Zera say that there's a problem understanding it that way? So what exactly is this question? If we're going to say that we learn from moisu mosu. Are you going to say his problem would be then why Dafka are we learning from Ovid Yid Oni and giving them skila? Instead, why don't we learn by Exeter Shava from the instead why don't we learn from Exeter Shava from Eishas Ish? And we just established before that Eishas Ish is Chenek, and maybe therefore maybe all these other cases should be getting Chenek as well. So you're going to say that that's the question. If we're learning from most Yumasu Eishasish Kokashale, he's wondering about Eishasish Lemesiv Ulamigmar most Yumas Mi Ovid Oni. So the question would be, why don't we learn instead the Gzeda Shava most? So the question might be actually the other way around, not why we learn the other ones, not why we don't learn the other ones from Eishasish, but why don't we learn Eishasish herself from Oivin Yedoni? Lemesi v'ligmar mi Oivin most Yumas mi Oivin Yedoni. What we should ask then, why don't we learn the most Yumas that it says by an Eishasish, by a Noif and Nefes, why don't we learn from Oivin Yedoni? Malahalan b'skila afkan b'skila, and say that an Eishasish in all cases should get skila. Okay, Tosva says maybe strictly speaking, So is that Reb Zera's question? Is Reb Zera's question that if you're going to say we're learning from Moisu Masu, why are we only applying that to the various cases that we're going to learn in the next Mishnah where a person is Chayev Skila, but Eishas Ish is not among them? Why don't we include Eishas Ish in that category as well? Because after all, by them also it says Moisu Masu. And we would learn by Exeter Shava that it means Skila. But if that's the question, it can't be that that's his question. Mida Omer Achmona Arusa b'skila, given that the Torah says that an Arusa, that a Naira Hamarosa gets skila, Miklal the Nesua lab b'skila. Obviously, Nesua can't be getting skila, because otherwise the Torah would have no reason to single out a Naira Hamarosa. The Ela Make over the Ime Kakashale. So you're going to say that maybe Reb Zera's question is about a person who hits his father or mother and wounds them, where that's one of the six cases that's Chayiv Chenek. And you're going to say lemesi. So you're going to ask lemesi or lemigma ma'uvi yidoni. And there also it says moisu. There also it says moisumas. So you're going to say why don't we learn that by exeda shava from oven yidoni? The answer is why would we ad degami ma'uvi yidoni ligmu me'eshesish. After all, if you have moisumas, if you have the expression moisumas by oven yidoni, and you also, which gets skila, and you also have the same expression by Eishasish. So why should we assume that a person hits his father or mother, then he gets skila like Oven Yedoni? Once we already have Eishasish, which is clearly Chenek, and we establish that because it has to be by elimination, because otherwise she'd be no different than a Naira Marosa, then yeah, why? What's Reb Zera's problem? Why shouldn't we assume that a Maka Ovav Imoy is learned from Eishasish that it gets Chenek? After all, as we said before, after all, as we said before, you can't make a harsher punishment if you don't have a clear source that it should be an easier one. And since you're going to say, so it's like this, if Eishas Ish herself was going to be learned from Oven Yedoni and you were going to say it's Skila, then fine, then you don't really have a basis for a question. But obviously that can't be, because since Naira Moros is Skila, necessarily a regular Eishas Ish must be Chenek. So that being the case, then what is Reb Zera wondering? Why we're learning other cases, such as a person hits his parents, that they should be chayav chenek, and we're learning by Gzeira Shava from Eishas Ish? What's his problem? Of course, we should learn from Eishas Ish because she's getting the lighter punishment, and as we said before, you always have to choose the lightest punishment that's available. The answer is Amar Leih. So Ravina answers no. Reb Yirmiyah's question was what? Reb Yirmiyah wasn't wondering about the people who are chayiv chenek, why they're not getting skila. His question was actually the other way around. The other ones who are chayiv skila that we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, the 18 cases that are chayiv skila, and of those, only a few of them, it explicitly says in the Torah, Chayiv Skila. So the question is about all the other ones. De'i b'mois yumas gamri. If we're learning by Gzeda Shava from mois yumas, from Oven Yedoni, why dafka from Oven Yedoni? Ad de gamri ma'Oven Yedoni ligmu me'eshas ish. Instead of learning from Oven Yedoni, we might as well learn from Eishas Ish. And that would also satisfy what we said before, that we want to try to find the most lenient possible punishment. So therefore, Abaye is saying that in fact we are learning. So in fact, the answer is, Abaye answered, we are in fact learning from the words Dmehem Bom. Now, literally, now the Mefarshim on the Pesukim explain that in the simple meaning, Dmehem Bom, which means their blood is on them, in the simple sense, what it means is, in other words, they're responsible for their own deaths. Like, they're the ones who did something wrong, and therefore the Torah is saying nobody else should consider themselves feeling guilty that these people were executed. You should realize these people brought it on themselves. But we also learn it, we also use it in the halachic sense, for Gzeira Shava, that every time it says Dmehem Bom, then they're chayev skila. And since by each of the cases that we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, by each one of them, it says Dmehem Bom, then therefore we have that Gzeira Shava, and we're able to learn that way that they're chayev skila. Tosfos points out that okay, the question was not really so much to learn from Eishes Ish. The question is maybe at least because then we already said before the default is Chenek, so we wouldn't even need a Gzeira Shava for it. The question was at least maybe we should learn from Reitzeach and maybe Chayiv Hereg. Where are we getting Skila? And the answer is we're not learning from Mos Yumosu at all. We're actually learning from Dmehem Bom, which says uniquely only by these 18, and therefore those are the ones that are Chayiv Skila and no other ones. Okay. So here's the list. The Mishnah says, Elohein and Iskolin. The following people are getting skila. Number one, Habala Aim, a man has relations with his mother, Val Esha Sa'av, or his father's wife, meaning even if she's not his mother, Vala Kala, or his daughter-in-law, Vala Schur, or another man, Mishkav Zachar, Vala Behema, or he has relations with an animal, Va'isha Mavias Behema, and or a woman who mates with an animal. So far that's six rather. Vamagadif, a person who blasphemes, who curses Hashem, Va'oyvid Avodas Kechavim, who worships Avodah Zarah. And the next one is a person who gives of his children to Moloch. Now, on the face of it, Moloch is another type of Avodah Zarah, so why list it separately? But later on in the Perek, we're going to discuss that some Tanoim hold, and the Tana of our Mishnah being one of them, that the whole ritual with Moloch, with having the children go between the fires over there, is not actually Avodah Zarah per se. It's a religious ritual that they had in those times, but it's not considered actual Avodah Zarah. So therefore, the Mishnah has to list it separately. We'll learn more about that in more detail. We'll learn about this whole thing of Moloch later on in Daf Samach Gimel Samach Dalin. Anyway, the next one is Val Oiv Yidoni. The next ones are a person who does the magic of Oiv and Yidoni, which those count as two separate ones. Vamachalos Shabbos, a person who desecrates Shabbos. Vamachalol Ovav Ima, he curses his father or mother. Rashi points out, by the way, an interesting point. So here we just said that a person hits his father or mother and wounds them is chayev chenek. On the other hand, if he curses them, then we're saying he's chayev skila. Why so much harsher? Rashi points out because you have two things he did together. First of all, he disrespected his parents, and second of all, he used the name of Hashem for no purpose. So those two things, the combination of those two things together is what gets him skila. On the other hand, if he had only hit and wounded them, then it would only be chenek, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta. Next, Vahba Naira Mairosa, he has relations with a Naira Mairosa, as we learned earlier in the Perek. Vahamesis, the next one is a person who tries to convince somebody else to worship Avodah Zarah. Vahamediach, a person who does the same thing to a city at large, which if they listen to him, then they become an Irani Dachas. So those count as two separate Isurim. Vahamachashif, a person who does certain other kinds of magic. Now we had Oiv and Yidoni. Those are separate types. Vahamachashif is other types of magic that we're going to talk about towards the end of the Perek. And the 18th one is Uben Sora Remora. So 17 of these are going to be dealt with in our Perek, some of them in our Mishnah, some of them in the next few Mishnayas. The Ben Sora Remora has a Perek of his own, the next Perek. Okay. So let's talk about some details within these, the Mishnah says. Habala Aim, a man has relations with his mother, Chayev Aleha, Mishum Aim, or Mishum Eishes Av. He'll be Chayev on two grounds. Number one, because she's his mother, and number two, because she's his father's wife, assuming, of course, that she is married to her, that she is married to, is or was married to his father. Now Rashi explains that the point is, and why if it's a matter of Mrs. Basin, he can't be killed twice anyhow. So it means that this we're talking about b'shoigig. If he were to do such a thing b'shoigig, he would have to bring two chatois. One because she's his mother. In general, the rule is any case where a person is chayav Mrs. Basin, Or Kores, if he does something b'mezid, then if he does the same thing b'shoigig, then instead he brings a chatas in most cases. So these are among them. So he would have to bring a chatas if he did this b'shoigig, and therefore the point is that he would have to bring two separate chatas. And there is a different explanation also that it refer the Yerushalmi and our Mishnah understands that it means b'mezid, and the point is obviously it can't mean that they kill him twice, but it means in other words when they're giving him hasra, they can give him either hasra, they can give him hasra on either one. They could tell him don't do that because this is your mother, or they could tell him don't do that because this is your father's wife, and either way is an equally valid hasra, and he would be chayiv misa. So he's chayev for both of them. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ena chayev ella mishum ha'em bilvad. Rabbi Yehuda holds that no, he's chayev only for the fact that she's his mother, as we're going to learn in the Gemara why Rabbi Yehuda holds that. An interesting point we should discuss is why does the Mishnah put things in this order? Why did the Mishnah choose this particular order to list the 18 cases of people that are chayiv misa? So the Teferes Yisrael deals with it in detail, and not Teferes Yisrael, sorry, the Tosfos Yom Tov explains that. So it's like this. He says that you have there's some of them that it says in some of them that it says in Parashas Kedoshim, and so he says like this. The first few are all in Achrei Mois and Kedoshim in this order. Now the you have the Machashif is earlier among Parashas Arayas, but first you have the ones that go together in a group that are in Parashas Achrei Mois and Kedoshim, and therefore he puts them together. Moilach is in Parashas Kedoshim before the other ones, but you have the Arayas are listed in Parashas Achrei Mois, so therefore so it put it afterwards. It didn't want to stick it between the Arayas. Then the Megadif and the Ovid Avodah Zarah is more of an insult to Hashem, more than Moilach, which as we just said, Moilach is not really an Avodah Zarah thing. So therefore it's listed next. Then you have Ba'ovid Oni, because they're afterwards in Parashas Kedoshim and also in Parashas Shoftim. Then you have Mechalos HaShabbos, which is more of an insult to Hashem, that he's denying Maisa Bereshis, and similar to Ovid Avodah Zarah. Then you have another Erva, Naira Ma'irasa. But it's listed separately than the other ones. And then you have Mesis and Mediach, and Mechashif, because he goes to explain that first we wanted to go through Arias and Avodah Zarah and Oven Yidoni and so forth. So he gives a whole explanation over here of why they're in this order. And then Ben Sora Murda would be the last one of all, because it's in Parshas Kisetze. So the Mishnah had said that if it was his mother and she's his father's wife, so the Tanakhama, he said he's chayiv for both, and Rabbi Yehuda says he's chayiv only on the grounds that she's his mother, as we're going to say in the Gemara how Rabbi Yehuda learns that, how Rabbi Yehuda learns that concept from a pasuk. Similarly, if he has relations with his father's wife, who wasn't his mother, she's his stepmother. So then, chayiv mishum eishes av or mishum eishes ish. Then he's going to be chayiv also on two grounds, because she's his father's wife and she's also a married woman. If she's still married to his father. In fact, in the previous case, Tosfos points out it didn't mention that also eishes ish, because we're talking about even after his father died. So she's not his father's wife anymore. She's not an eishes ish right now, but she was his father's wife, and she is his mother, and therefore the Tanakhama says he's chayiv for both. But yes, if his father was alive, in fact, it would be all three. But after his father's dead, it's only the two. And we're saying that now, on the other hand, when it's a stepmother, if his father was alive, then there's both. She's an eishes ish, and she's his father's wife. So now here Rabbi Yehuda is not disagreeing, as we'll see in the Gemara. Bein b'chaye ovev, bein la'acham misas ovev. This applies whether the iser of his father's wife applies whether his father was alive or whether his father has died. Bein mina erusin, bein mina nisuin, and it applies whether his father had only done erusin with her or whether he had done full nisuin, because erusin already makes it, she is considered his wife. As we know, it requires a get. It requires his get or his death to dissolve, etc. We learn the whole concept that so once there was Erisin, once there was Kedushin, she has already considered his wife. Kicha misdei Ephron, as Rashi brings. We learn with Gzeira Shava from Sdei Ephron that Kesef is a valid method of Kedushin and that it makes her his wife. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Bar kalosa, he has relations with his daughter-in-law. Chayav aleha, then again, there's two isurim, mishum kalosa, mishum eshesish, because she's his daughter-in-law, and because she's an eshesish, assuming she's still married to his son. The part that she's his daughter-in-law applies whether his son is still alive or whether his son died. Again, whether his son only was Makadish or whether they did Nisuin, either way, she's off limits to him as Kalosa, as his daughter-in-law. Okay, so now we had one case in the Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says that here you had where it's his mother and she was his father's wife, where the Tanakhama says he's chayiv on both grounds. Then he's chayiv for both, and on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda had said he's chayiv only on the grounds that she's his mother. Which again, if it was b'shoigig, then it would mean that he's bringing only one chatas according to Rabbi Yehuda, and if it was b'mezid, then it would mean according to Rabbi Yehuda, the hasra dafka has to be about the fact that she's his mother, not the fact that she's his father's wife. So the Gemara says Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says that if the mother was not suitable for the father, as we're going to explain, in other words, that there was some kind of issue in their marriage, then he would be chayev only on the grounds that she's his mother. In other words, when Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that when Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that well, so actually what it is the Tana of this Braisa has a different understanding of the of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. We have the Tanakhama saying that it doesn't matter as long as the mother was married to the father, then he's chayev also on the grounds of Eishes Av. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said that he's always only chayev because of the fact that she's his mother. Now in the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda is distinguishing between whether she was allowed to be married to his father or not. So if the mother was not suitable to be married to his father, then Rabbi Yehuda says he's only chayev el mishuma ein bovad, only because of the mother. But in other words, but if she was suitable, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree that he is chayev for both. So my einu ru'uyeloi, what do we mean by that? Ilei mechayve krisis, the chayve missus based in. Do we mean that this wife was also to the father? Do we mean that this woman was also to the father on grounds of kores or on grounds of missus based in? So kores would be, for example, if she was his sister or his aunt or various other cases. Also by missus based in would be, for example, that she was his own mother-in-law or daughter-in-law or mother or whatever. So then you're going to say that So you're saying that if she's married to his father, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if now the son was now to have relations with her, he wouldn't be chayiv on the grounds of Eishes Av. Well, what does that mean? Miklal de Rabbanan Savri Afagav de Einu Ru'uyel Loi. Does that mean the Chacham would hold even then he would be chayiv on because of Eishes Av? How could it be? Holas le kedushin begava. After all, the father didn't have any ability to have kedushin with her because kedushin are not toifus by chayiv krisis or by chayiv missus based in. So therefore, so in other words, if a man is Makadish's sister, for example, because there's a Chiyuv Kodesh over there, it's not considered a Kedushin at all. The Nisuin is not considered a Nisuin at all. So how would Rabbi Yehuda be saying, if the father was married to his sister and then their son went and was Mizana with his mother, then you're going to say he's only Chayev because she's his mother, not because she's his father's wife, implying that the Chachamim would say he's Chayev also because she's his father's wife. The Chacham also know that she's not his father's wife because she's his sister and she can't be his wife as well. Ela chayve lavin. So therefore, no. What it means is we're talking about where she's only also to him on grounds of a lav. So for example, let's say, she's a mamzeres, or he's a kohen gadol and she's an almano, or he's a kohen hedyot and she's a grusha, etc. All those cases where there's only a lav. The cases, for example, an Ammoni, my Ovi, is married to a Basi, so all the various cases where there's a Chiyuv Lav. Rabbi Yehuda, Savala, Kedab Akiva, Dama, Ein Kedushin, Tovs, and Mechayve Lavin. Now, in Yevamos, you have a several way machlokas among the Tanoim, in what cases are Kedushin not Tovs, and you have the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that any time, not only where it's Chrisis or Mrs. Bastin, Rabbi Akiva holds also where there's a Chayve Lavin, and Kedushin aren't Tovs either. So Rabbi Yehuda holds like that. So therefore, in short, so let's say, for example, here we have the father was married to a mamzeres, let's say, to take a simple example. That was an Issur Lav. The Chachamim hold Kedushin Artoifus. Therefore, even though there was an Issur Lav, if now their son is Mezana with his mother, then therefore she's his mother and she's his father's wife. Aye, the father was also to be married to her, but it's only an Issur Lav and Kedushin were Toifus. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa is taking the view that no, in this case, since Rabbi Akiva holds Kedushin are not Toifus, then therefore she's not considered his wife, and therefore the son could be chayav only on grounds of that she's his mother and not that she's his father's wife. And then in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said a blanket statement that in all cases he's chayav only on the grounds that she's his mother. So in other words, you would have three different opinions over here, according to the Tanakhama always, according to Rabbi Yehuda and the Mishnah never, and according to Rabbi Yehuda and the Braisa, depends whether Kedushin were toifus or not. Okay. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rabbi Oshia. Well, Rabbi Oshia says, I have a contradiction to that. So you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda, you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Akiva as far as who Kedushin are toifus with. But a Braisa says, now you have like this, when it comes to Yibum, so we know, of course, you know, you have cases where there's a mitzvah of yibum. Then you have cases where, for one reason or another, they can't do yibum because the yivama is also to the yavam. You have cases, as it talks about at the beginning of yivamas, where no yibum is possible and no chalitza is even necessary because she's his relative or whatever. Bas ochiv, for example, that the dead brother is married to his living brother's daughter, etc., and her tzara. And so forth. Then the Mishnah says in Yevamos, Isur mitzvah. Now, what about if she's also to the surviving brother only on grounds of a mitzvah? Because of a mitzvah, which we're going to define soon, what that is, or the Issu Kedusha, or where it's only an Issu Kedusha, in those cases, Kultus V'lei Misyabmos, in those cases, they have to do Chalitza, they cannot do Yibum. They can't do Yibum because of the Isur, but they're not completely potter because, after all, Kedushin would be Toifus. Rashi points out, by the way, based on the Gemara and Yevamos over there, why don't you say, after all, there's a mitzvah esse of Yibum, there's a mitzvah loisa esse against it, why shouldn't we say the esse overrides the loisa esse? And the Gemara explains over there, in principle it could, but midrabbanon, we don't allow it, because then they might end up doing a second bia, and there he's not mekayim the mitzvah esse anymore, and then he would only be over on the loisa esse without being mekayim the esse. So therefore, midrabbanon, we don't allow them to do Yibum in the first place. But nevertheless, since daraisa, they could have done Yibum, because esse doicha loisa esse, therefore they need chalitza. Now, what is the definition of mitzvah and kedusha? Isur mitzvah means shnius midivrei sofim. The words isur mitzvah in that mishnah refer to the shnius, the second level relatives that are also midrabbanan. Meaning, for example, let's say so in our mishnah we had a person's daughter-in-law is also to him minatora midrabbanan, also his son's daughter-in-law, so his granddaughter-in-law would be also to him midrabbanan. That's an example of shnius. So yeah, there are lists over there in Yevamos. It lists about 20 cases of shnius, and some of them go across the generations. Meaning, in other words, so some of them, for example, go. Let's say, for example, not only a person's mother and grandmother are also to him in Atarda, but also his great 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 grandmother or his father, his great 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 grandfather's wife or whatever. All of those are included in shnius as well. In any case, so all of those are included in Shnius. Why is it called Isur Mitzvah? Shemitzvah, the Shemari, Divrei Chachamim, because the mitzvah to listen to what the Chachamim say when they make Gzeiros and Takanos. Isur Kedusha means Almona L'Kohen Gadol, Grusha V'Chalutza L'Kohen Hedyot. Isur Kedusha would be, for example, where the woman is an Almona and the surviving brother is a Kohen Gadol, or where she's a Grusha V'Chalutza and the surviving brother is a Kohen Hedyot. Why are we calling it Isur Kedusha? Because the pasuk says about the kohenim, kedushim yiyu lelekehem. They should be holy to Hashem. So therefore, the isurim that they have of marriage are called Isur Kedusha. And the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yehuda, it says exactly the Mishnah. V'toni alor, Rabbi Yehuda machlif. We learn in a braisa that Rabbi Yehuda flips around the definitions of Isur Mitzvah and Isur Kedusha. He holds that Isur Mitzvah would be the almona and the grusha for the kohenim and the shnius, according to him, are called Isur Kedusha. He calls the Almona Lakoin Gadol and so forth. He calls mitzvah because at the end of Sefer Vayikra, after it lists all the couple of hundred mitzvahs that are in Sefer Vayikra, which includes the mitzvahs of the Kohenim, it ends off Eloh HaMitzvahs. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds that anything that's in that Sefer can be categorized under the category of Issu Mitzvah. And on the other hand, Issu Kedusha is, the Chachamim say, Kaddish Atzmach B'Mutar Lach, make yourself holy and stay away even from things that in principle would have been mutter for you. In any case, so Rabbi Yehuda flips around the two definitions, implying, says the Gemara, Chalufi Huda Machlif. So he's flipping around the definitions. Hochal it's a boya. But apparently he agrees with the actual din that in such a case, she would need chalitza. So again, let's say, for example, that the brother was married to a woman who was oser to, so let's say, for example, the brother who passed away was married to an almana, and he's a kohen, and he's perfectly allowed to, but now his surviving brother is a kohen gadol, and he's also in an almana. Then we're saying that she can't do yibum, but she still needs chalitza. Now, the Sachdaidach Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Akiva, Svirolei, if Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Akiva, then Mechti, let's consider, Chayve Lavin, Rabbi Akiva, Chayve Krisis Domi. After all, Rabbi Akiva considers Chayve Lavin, such as an almana to a Kohen Gadol, equal to Chayve Krisis, and he says Kedushin are not Toifis. So according to Rabbi Akiva, there should be no necessity to... let's draw out the case a little differently. Not that the surviving brother is a Kohen Gadol, but rather let's say the dead brother was a Kohen Gadol, and he was married to an almana who was also to him. Now, according to the Chachamim, fine, Kedushin or Tofus, she was his wife, nevertheless, she was also to him, and now, therefore, she needs, therefore, now, the surviving brother doesn't do Yibum with her, only Chalitza. But according to Rabbi Akiva, the Kohen Gadol who died and who was married to an Amona over here, to begin with, was also to, he was also to marry her, but to begin with, Kedushin weren't Toifus. Therefore, there's nothing to talk about Chalitza V'Yibum. V'chayve Krisus Lavne Chalitza V'Yibum, Ninu. The same way as people, as where there's Kores involved, then no Yibum is possible and no Chalitza is necessary. The same way, Rabbi Akiva would hold the same thing as far as Chayve Lavin. So it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't seem to hold like Rabbi Akiva. Otherwise, why would he only be flipping around the definitions of Issu Mitzvah and Issu Kedusha, but otherwise saying, I agree with the Tanakama on the din, if according to Rabbi Akiva, he shouldn't. Tosfos actually wonders why we would say that. I mean, after all, fine, we could say that they're similar as far as Kedushin being Tofus or not Tofus, but maybe we should say that when it comes to Yibum, maybe we would say that maybe we'd say again, Esa Doicha Lois Esa. So Tosfos asks the question, the Rashba gives an answer that we have a general rule. The Gemara says that at least on a Daraisa level, only where Yibum is possible is Chalitza necessary. And here, since Yibum is not possible, because again, according to Rabbi Akiva, Kedushin are not Tosfos, then therefore Chalitza is irrelevant also. So therefore, that's why the Gemara is assuming that the same thing would apply. And then the Rashba goes on to bring something from the Yerushalmi about that Rabbi Akiva learns, that Rabbi Akiva learns it by a Kavah Choymer, that even when there's only an Issu Lav and there's still no Mitzvah of Yibum, but nevertheless Chalitza would be, and therefore Chalitza is not necessary. But again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why would that be? According to Rabbi Yehuda, we see that he seems to disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, with Rabbi Akiva on that. The answer is, the Devar of the Tanakama Kamar. It means Rabbi Yehuda, when he flips around the definitions of Issu Mitzvah and Issu Kedusha, he's saying, according to you, Tanakama, you're telling me this din, and you have this definition of Issu Kedusha and Issu Mitzvah, I'm telling you should reverse the definitions. The Leilai Svidalei, he himself doesn't necessarily hold that way. He may hold, like Rabbi Akiva, as we just said, that to begin with, there's nothing to talk about, at least as far as Issur, what the Tanakhama calls Issur Kedusha, and what Rabbi Yehuda is arguing, you should at least call it Issur Mitzvah instead, namely, for example, the marriage restrictions for Kohenim. That Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that in fact Rabbi Akiva holds Kedushin aren't Tofus, and Rabbi Yehuda would say, I agree with that, and therefore no Chalitza or Yibum is necessary in the first place. Fine. So that takes care of Rabbi Yehuda. So that explains Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Braisa, that when he distinguishes between whether the mother was suitable for the father, means, in other words, whether there's an issu lav or issu, whether there's an issu lav involved, and therefore whether kedushin or toifus. Rabbi Akiva and following him, Rabbi Yehuda holds that no. Therefore, you can't call this woman his father's wife, and therefore, if the son is mezana with her, then you can't say that he's chayav for his father's wife because she's not his wife in the first place. And the chachamim would disagree and say that look, kedushin or toifus, she is his wife, even though there was an issu lav involved.
Okay. Well, whether it's a machmir or the chachamim, what's the
on these two points? Holding kedushin or toifus. The chachamim hold for example, because the chachamim hold. So we have different opinions about it. You have different opinions about it in Yevamos or kedushin not toifus only in chayvim misses based in or only in chayvim misses based in and chayvim krisus or according to Rabbi Akiva even chayvim laban. That's we have different opinions about it in Yevamos. When do we say that kedushin are not toifus? What kinds of isurim? So the Tanakh, the Chachamim hold over there, and the halacha is like them that only by krisus and missus bastin. So a person is makadosh's sister, a person is makadosh's mother, a person is makadosh an eshes ish. Nothing happens because that's not valid kedushin. But a person is makadosh a mamzeres or a kohen is makadosh a grusha kedushin are toifus, and meaning she needs a get from him.
Mm-hmm. But they don't give a reason why they adopt this.
Yeah, the Gemara in Yevamos discusses it. The Gemara in Yevamos discusses the reasons they learn it based on various psukim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Gemara continues. So far, what we have is like this. So far, we have three opinions. We have the Tanakama in our Mishnah, we have Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, and then we have Rabbi Yehuda in a Braisa. So, by the way, Tosfos points out the Gemara could have given a different answer to for Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara could have said, even within Rabbi Akiva's opinion itself, there are a few different opinions in that Gemara in Yevamos, what Rabbi Akiva holds. One opinion is that he holds that there's a difference between lavim that involve close relatives versus lavim that involve other factors. For example, according to Rabbi Akiva, a kohen marrying a grusha, one way of understanding Rabbi Akiva, is that kedushin would be toifus in that case because not a matter of that they're relatives. It's a matter of that. It's a matter of that he's a kohen and she's off limits to him. But you have certain lavim that apply because they're relatives, and that would be the kind of cases where Rabbi Akiva would hold kedushin on toifus. Anyway, the Gemara didn't give that answer. The Gemara gave the other answer over here that Rabbi Yehuda Bechlal doesn't hold that kedushin are toifus in these cases. He holds like the version of Rabbi Akiva that kedushin are not toifus b'chai v'labin. The Gemara continues. Ki osir Rabbi Yitzchak, when Rabbi Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael, Toni Kedetnan, he taught a brisa that agrees with our Mishnah's version of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda in a chayev el mishum ha'im bilvad, that Rabbi Yehuda says he's only chayev on the grounds that she's his mother. Meaning, in other words, like this, we had the brisa before where Rabbi Yehuda is distinguishing whether she's suitable to marry his mother or to marry his father or not. In other words, whether kedushin or toifus. But now this new braisa that Rabbi Yitzchak taught says that Rabbi Yehuda's version exactly as it is in our Mishnah, meaning it's not a matter of whether kedushin or toifus. Always across the board, Rabbi Yehuda holds that he can never be chayev for two grounds for the fact that she's his mother and his father's and his father's wife, only for the fact that she's his mother. So the braisa had said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Chayev Ela Mishum Ha'Im Bilvad. So for time am I, well, why would that be? According to the Yehuda in the Mishnah, and according to the Yehuda in the new Brice over here, why would we say that even if she is perfectly allowed to marry his father, nevertheless, if the son is mezana with her, then it's only chayev on the grounds that she's his mother and not that she's on the ground, not on the grounds also that she's his father's wife? After all, those are two different isurim in the Torah. So the answer is Amar Abaye to Amar Kro, because the pasuk says Imcha hi. The pasuk says don't uncover the nakedness, don't eres avicha veeres imcha lo sigale. And the pasuk continues Imcha hi. She is your mother. Now, what are those extra words? She's your mother. Of course, she's your mother. It means mishum imay at mechayev vi at mechayev mishum eshes av. Means Rabbi Yehuda is learning from that you can only be mechayev the son only because she's his mother, not because she's also his father's wife. Well, the Gemara says Elamei Ata. By that logic, the next pasuk continues Eres Eishes Avicha Loisegale. The next pasuk continues Don't uncover the nakedness. Don't have relations with your father's wife. Eres Avicha Hi, because she's considered your father's erva. So, if you're going to say again the words Eres Avicha Hi, then what is it? You're going to learn the same kind of limun. Mishum Eishes Av Atamachayvay. It would mean that you're being mechayev only on the grounds that she's his father's wife, v'yat mechayev mishum imoy, but you're not being mechayev him because she's his mother, then what does that mean? Ella imoy shehi eshes aviv. So what does that mean? If she's his mother and she's his father's wife, koi hocha umemayet law, koi hocha umemayet law. So what does that mean? Would he not be chayev at all? Would we say that when it comes to imcha, we would say we're excluding that because she's also eshes aviv, and the pasuk is saying imcha, he implying that you can only be mechayev him because she's his mother, and then you're going to say you have the other pasuk that also says that, in other words, would we combine together the two limudim from the psukim and say the same kind of miut by both of them, that the issur would apply, that the chiyuv would apply only if it's one or the other, either imoy or eshes aviv, but not both? What's the logic? Are you going to say that then you're going to say that he's not chayev for her at all? After all, you're not going to say the psukim contradict one another. Now, that's Rashi's that's Rashi's explanation at first. But then Rashi says, it's a little difficult to understand that way. For one thing, why is the question not on Rabbi Huda itself? The question should be on Rabbi Huda himself. He agrees he's chayev on the grounds of the mother. So why are we only asking once Abaye brings the drosha? The question should be on Rabbi Huda himself. So Rashi goes at some length over here and explains that that actually Rashi prefers to say that no, let's learn the next couple of lines of Gemara actually, and then we'll explain what Rashi says. So again, the Gemara has asked that what are you saying? You're coming over here by Imoy and Mamayat law, and you're excluding Eshesov, the Koi Hocha, and then you have Eshesov or Mamayat law, and you're taking away Isu Imoy. Would that mean he's not Chayev at all? What's the logic? Hash to Imoy Sheina Eshesov Mechayev. If you're telling me when she's his mother and she's not his father's wife, he's Chayev for the fact that she's his mother. And that if she's his father's wife and not his mother, he's mechoyev because she's his father's wife. What's the logic that you say? Are you going to say the logic that if she's both his father's wife and his mother, he shouldn't be chayev at all? It's very illogical to say that. So in other words, again, Rashi's first explanation is that does have these lines in the Gemara, and Rashi's first explanation is, given that the psukim obviously don't contradict one another, then we have to say that would mean the only way to understand it, if you're going to tell me, like you're saying, Abaya, that there's a miut in the pasuk over here, then you would have to say that there are two miutim and the two psukim back to back, and it would mean, in other words, that he wouldn't be chayev in either case, but it's not logical to say that. But then Rashi goes on to say that no, the Gemara's the Gemara's main problem is that in other words, according to the first explanation in Rashi, the Gemara is not bothered by the contradiction of the Pesukim, but rather by the logical contradiction that it would come out. According to that you would have, if she's both his father's wife and his mother, he wouldn't be chayev at all. And what's the logic to say that? But then Rashi prefers a different explanation, that the Gemara is actually not asking on the logical contradiction. And in fact, the words in the Gemara, hashta, these couple of lines that we just had, hashta ime she'enesh eshesaviv, is really unnecessary for the Gemara's argument. The Gemara's argument is that the psukim themselves seem to contradict one another. First, you have the pasuk that says imchahi, that says, in other words, that if she's eshes aviv, then he's chayev only because she's his mother. But then the next pasuk, eshes avicha, says ervas avichahi. We would learn that the only reason to be mechayev him is because of eshes av. And the Gemara therefore is bothered that the psukim themselves seem to contradict one another. So again, according to the first explanation in Rashi, the question is not, the psukim obviously don't contradict one another, but how does that work out logically? And according to the second version, according to the second explanation in Rashi, which Tosfos also prefers, is that it comes out the psukim themselves are contradicting one another. Is he chayev only because if she's his mother, or is he chayev only because she's his eshes aviv? Anyway, so that's one question on Abaya. The two, and furthermore, we have to ask, L'rabbanan nami, even according to the Chachamim, Hoksiv Imchahi. After all, the Chachamim also know it says in the Pasuk Imchahi, and what are they using that for? If you're going to tell me Rabbi Huda is learning a miut from that you can only be Mechayev because Imchahi, and that's it, then the Chachamim should have to learn the same thing. They have the same words in the Pasuk. Rather, we have to say, according to the Chachamim, What are we doing with the words imchahi? That we're using it to teach us what Rav Shisha Breider of Idi says further on in the Gemara, that he learns from that that it doesn't matter whether she was married to his father or whether, for example, his father had been ma'anis her. We're going to learn that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. That Rav Shisha Breider of Idi points out when the pasuk says imchahi means regardless whether she's your mother because your father married her, or regardless whether she's your mother because, for example, your father raped her and there was never any marriage in the first place. Either way, she's your mother, and the same issue applies. So therefore, the Rabbi Huda Nami, Hahumi Boiler, the Chidr of Shisha Breder of Idi. Well, Rabbi Huda would need the Pasuk to learn the same kind of thing. So therefore, you can't say that he's learning from that a miyot that he's chayav only because she's his mother. And Rashi also adds that then, also as far as the second pasuk, when it says erva savichahi, doesn't mean to exclude that he shouldn't be chayev on both grounds. It comes to include that the concept of Aisha of erva savichahi applies whether his father is still alive or even after his father has died. So again, as we said in the Mishnah, the father was married to this woman, even though she's not your mother, and even though the father is now dead, nevertheless there's still an iser of Aishas of. We learn that from the words erva savichahi. So neither pasuk is meant as a mute. On the contrary, both psukim are teaching us something extra. So the question comes back then, where is Rabbi Huda learning that in our Mishnah and in the Braisa that Rabbi Yitzchak brought that he should be chayiv only because she's his mother and not because she's Eishes Aviv? El Omer of Acha Breider of Ika. So Omer Kro. No, rather it's like this. The pasuk says Ervasa. The pasuk says, "Ervas avichav ervas imchalisigale imchahi." We quoted the pasuk "erv imchahi," and we said now that the words "imchahi" are teaching us a different limud. But the pasuk continues, "Loisigale ervasa, do not uncover her nakedness." So we learn from the ervasa in the singular, "Mishum erva achas at mechayve." You can only be mechayve him on grounds of one erva. "V'iat mechayve mishum shtei ervas." You can't be mechayve him on the grounds of two ervas. So that's where Rabbi Huda is getting that you cannot be mechayve him for the fact that she's his father's wife, because that would be two different chiyuvim of ervasa. The Chamra V'chaye adds a point. Since right before that in the pasuk it said imchahi, then therefore Rabbi Huda is going to say the one chiyuv that we learn from Ervasa is going to be imchahi, the fact that she's his mother. Well, the Gemara asks, Elamayata, what about the pasuk a few psukim later? It says, Erves kalos chaloisigale, don't uncover the nakedness of your daughter-in-law. Eishes binchahi, she's your son's wife. Loisigale ervasa, don't uncover her nakedness. There also you have the word ervasa in the singular. Hochinamia, you're going to say also, we're going to darish in the same kind of thing. Mishum erva achas atamachayve, viatamachayve, mishum shtei ervas, that you can only be machayve him on one ground and not on another one. You can't be machayve him also for the fact that she's an Eishes Ish. V'hotnan, in our Mishnah, we said, Abba, kalose chayev alem, mishum kalose, mishum Eishes Ish, that he's chayev for his daughter-in-law, the fact that she's his daughter-in-law and that she's an Eishes Ish. Bein b'chayev b'noi, bein l'acham mises b'noi, the fact that she's also, as his daughter-in-law applies, whether his son is alive or even after his son dies, v'loi polig Rabbi Huda. And Rabbi Huda does not disagree with that din. So we see that Rabbi Huda has no problem being b'chayev him on grounds of two ervas. So we see this is the same way as he's mechayev, the same way as he can be mechayev when the person's son is still alive, and he's mechayev for the daughter-in-law because she's a daughter-in-law and because she's an Eishes Ish. And if Yehuda agrees with that, why should he be disagreeing? And even though it says ervasa over there, so why don't we say why by his mother would Yehuda be darshaning from the word ervasa that it means only one and not two? Okay. So the Gemara says, Ella Amar Rava. So you know what Rava says? We are going to learn, after all, like Abaya said before, we learn from Imchahi. Because you're going to ask in that case, then what about Eres Avichahi? And then we have either the logical contradiction or the contradiction between the Psukim that we said before. Rava says, no, because Kasavar Rabbi Yehuda, Eres Avicha, Zu Eishes Avicha. Because it's like this. When it says Ervas Avicha in that pasuk, the nakedness of your father, what does that mean? Does it actually mean the father's wife, or does it actually mean the father himself? Now, later on, the Gemara is going to discuss that one possibility that the words Ervas Avicha can actually mean that there is an iser for a man to have relations with his own father. Now, of course, it would be chayev anyway because of mishkav zachor. But in other words, the point is the Gemara is going to discuss later on that that can be. If we say that erva sevicha means his actual father, then it would mean that if he has relations with his father, he's chayev twice: once for mishkav zachor and one for because it's his father. Rabbi Yehuda holds that no, the words erva sevicha in that pasuk refers to your father's wife. So he learns that from a Gzeira Shava, that he learns that from a Gzeira Shava, as the Gemara is going to discuss on Daf Nun Dalet. So because later on, the Pasuk says, later on, the Pasuk, when it talks, in Parshas Emor, it talks about the actual Arayas themselves. In Parshas Kedoshim, it repeats them and gives the punishment for each one of them. And when it comes to his father's wife, there the Pasuk actually says that he's Chayiv Misa for it. And the Pasuk also uses over there, Eres Oviv Gila, that he uncovered his father's nakedness, and it says that he's Chayiv Skila for it. So therefore, there also it uses the word Eres Oviv, and it's clearly referring to Eshes Oviv, because there's that earlier in the Pasuk. So Rabbi Yehuda holds the earlier Pasuk in Parshas Achrei Mois also, when it says Eres Avicha, the Eres Imcha does not mean a separate Isser for his father's Erva, but rather it means there also, it means his father's wife. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda learns, So therefore, he understands mashma bein eishes oviv she imoy bein eishes oviv sheina imoy. So that means the words eres avicha referring to his father's wife, that's going to refer to whether she is his mother or whether she's not his mother. Either way, he's chayav because of eishes oviv. And then you have imoy sheina eishes oviv. What about if she's his mother but not his father's wife, meaning that his father, for example, was ma'anis her or otherwise had relations with her outside of marriage? Minayin, and how would we know? Tamad loymar ervas imcha lo sigale imcha hi. That is why the pasuk continues and says the nakedness of your mother, and it finishes off imcha hi, she is your mother. So in other words, the words imcha hi, from that we're learning mishum imay at mechayve v'yat mechayve mishum eishes aviv. So we're learning from that that you mechayve only for the fact that she's his mother, not for the fact that she's his father's wife. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying like this. The question was why we don't learn. If we're going to learn from imcha hi that it means only because she's his mother, then by that logic, eres avicha hi would also have to mean that he's chayiv only because she's his father's wife. And then you have the contradiction that we said before. Rava is explaining like this: that no, when it comes to eres avicha hi, we're learning from that is taka not chayav because she's his mother, because that second pasuk is talking strictly about where she's his father's wife. Now, there's no reason that second pasuk doesn't have to be mamayit to anything else. She's his father's wife, but she's not his mother. So there's no reason to be mechayev on grounds that she's his mother. So obviously, eres avicha hi must be coming for some other drosha. No, the drasha that if she's his father's wife, but his father is alive, then he's chayev because of Eishes Aviv and not because of Eishes Ish. So we would learn that from it. But the imcha hi is in fact a miut telling us that he's chayev only because she's his mother and not because she's his father's wife. So that's how we reconcile. That's how we answer the question we asked before. Doesn't it seem the psukim are contradicting themselves, or logic is contradicting? That no, we're saying the ervas avicha hi from the second pasuk is telling us a whole different thing. It's not being mamayit, not to have a second punishment or a second chatas. It's being mamayit a different case. So therefore, only the imcha hi from the first one, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is a miut telling us that he's chayiv only because she's his mother and not because she's his father's and not because she's his father's wife. Now Rashi also adds then, what about Rav Shisha Breder of Idi's limud that we said before, that Rav Shisha Breder of Idi says that even if she's his father's anusa, then she's also considered his mother. Rashi points out Rabbi Huda doesn't really need that. He's anyway using his Gzeda Shava that he's going to say that even if his mother is not his father's wife, then he's still chayev for her for the fact that she's his mother. So therefore, he doesn't need Rav Shisha Breder of Idi's limud to learn that same concept from the words imchahi. The Chachamim who don't hold of that Gzeda Shava that the Gemara is going to talk about later, they need the words imchahi for that. So it comes out, therefore, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we do in fact learn from the word imchahi, like Abaya said originally, that is only chayev if she is imcha, as if she is his mother, as well as his father's wife, that he should be chayev only on the grounds that she's his mother. Rabbi Yehuda is learning that from the words imchahi. What about those other words, ervas aviv? From that we learn something else. From that we learn a different limud about what happens when his father is alive versus after his father died. So it works out nicely according to Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara continues, which will continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that in fact there is a braisa that explains Rabbi Yehuda's opinion exactly as Rava had explained it.